You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt.
All right, welcome everyone to another episode of Lean Local. This is the show where we've got concerns about what's going on nationally, internationally, the Gaza, Ukraine, and of course what's going on in D.C. and Madison. But here on Lean Local, we lean into what's going on here locally in the city of Green Bay, in the greater Green Bay community. And we have a guest that, you know, we've been doing this show for a little over a year. Finally get this guy in my studio. Chief Davis, Green Bay Police Chief. We're going to talk to him in just a second, but before I do, I know a little bit about this city, and you know, the mayor has, you know, 8 or 9 direct reports: police, fire, law, parks, and goes on. And while you say publicly they're all equal, you're just a little more equal than everyone else. I mean, you gotta have a good chief if you're gonna run a city. And I tell, when kids would come in to go speak to kids, or they come into the council chambers, would ask them, you know, what's the number one thing your parents looked for when they lived in a community? And it's public safety. It's just right. Hands down. I mean, there's other stuff, taxes. Everybody, taxes. Well,
sure.
But that's down there. So, Chief Davis, welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. We know each other a little bit, not as much as we're going to. We'll know each other a lot better in the next hour. How are you doing? You've been here, what, 5 years?
Not quite. Been here 3.5 years.
Oh, 3.5.
Here in September of 2021.
And you hailed from Portland.
I did, yeah.
And how do you, things weren't going great at that time.
You know, I guess it's all a matter of perspective. Portland is a very different community. It's on the West Coast. That's very different than it is, you know, than communities tend to be in the Midwest. It's certainly a city with a lot of challenges, but, you know, I spent 23 years in the police bureau there in a lot of different roles. And, you know, I like to look at the positive side. I learned a lot of really valuable things there that hopefully I'm able to use here in this role to add value to this community.
So we're going to get to what you're doing here, and you're doing a lot of great things, and I have that. And we'll get to the draft way, way later, okay? I know that you've been talking about that for the last month. And
a little bit.
But there's so many other things that I want to talk about first. I want to talk about, in policing, and any mayor would tell you what I just said about, that's probably one of the most important jobs in the city. So what attracted you here?
It was a couple of things. First, I do have a local connection. My wife is from Kaukauna, actually. She grew up there, and she is a graduate of St. Norbert College. So I think it was about 4 minutes after the city announced they were doing a nationwide search that my mother-in-law called and said, hey, come check this out. And we wanted to get back to this part of the country because neither of us was from Portland. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. So this is a lot more like what I grew up with,
right. Although
I've been away from there now for so long. But there was the local connection. And then as I got to know the city in the selection process, it really has a lot going for it. The public safety conversation here is it's a lot more, I would say, productive than it is in other places. It's a community that places a high value on public safety and on police service in particular. But it's also a community that has high expectations of its police department. And then, I mean, of course, the Packers are here because I'm married to a Wisconsin native. I know
what's
good for me. I'm a Packer fan. But in all seriousness, it is a great community. It's just the right size. It's a very safe community, but there's a lot of good work to do here.
Okay. So that's what attracted you here. 3.5 years later, did it meet your expectations? Or is it like, ooh, I didn't see this?
I think it exceeded them.
Really?
You know, it's the folks that we've gotten to know, and just the way this community welcomes you into it when you come from outside, or at least they did for me, has been really good. And you know, getting to know the men and women in the police department, we work with some fantastic people over there, but we've been able to accomplish a lot in the last few years. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the strength of this community and the consensus that you see. There's more consensus here about what good policing and public safety service looks like than I think you see in a lot of places.
I would agree with that. And I do think that the people who've been before you too was a pretty elevated job. And I always enjoyed being with the chief of police. I'm glad they never ran against me because he's pretty popular. How your daughter, who I, if you don't mind me, just yeah. She helped out at the homeless shelter. She wrote me a letter, and I work at the new community shelter. You're of course on the board there. Mm-hmm. How is she doing? Did she acclimate okay? I mean, that's gonna be a tough time to move.
Yeah, we had three kids and all teenagers at the time we moved. My oldest daughter actually is going to the University of Wisconsin, Madison.
No, oh, good.
But they really like it. They've really gone native. I think it has been a really good fit for all of them. They found good things to do in the schools and things that meet their interests, and it's been really good for all of us.
So here in Green Bay, you say it's supportive, and it is. It's not without its problems. I'll get to that a little bit later.
Sure.
The support, sure, you get out there, the kids high-five you, and the community thanks you. But how is the structure in terms of, like, I always thought you needed a new building. Do you have enough equipment? Is the financial support there as well? I mean, is it, you know, I say, you know, put the words to music?
Yeah, I think I've never worked for a police organization that felt like it had all the resources that it needs. And I've never seen a city government department that thought that either. But I think we do as well as we can, and I think we get a lot out of the resources that we do have. And we try not to focus on the things that we want to have, and we you know, our focus really is just on getting the most value out of the resources we have in terms of public safety. And, you know, compared to a lot of communities our size, especially in the Midwest, we're not doing too bad in terms of resources. Our facility has been a struggle for a long time, and we're right now working on a plan, hopefully, to, you know, as the city bought the Press Gazette building right next door to City Hall.
Right.
And we're in the preliminary phases of exploring what it would take to turn that into a police facility, and we're hopeful that that'll come to pass. And I think the willingness is definitely there, mm-hmm. on the part of our elected leaders to spend the resources on public safety, but resources are tight and they're scarce. And we also need to pave streets and have good, clean, healthy parks, and do all the other things that the city does. So, you know, long-winded way of saying, sure, could we use more resources? Absolutely. We're probably about 20 or 30 sworn positions and another dozen or more professional staff position short of
really?
Where we should be to meet demand for service. But we have been able to make realistic progress even in the last few years. You know, we've been able to add a few positions to the police department over the last few years, and so we'll get there.
Yeah. Just because I'm aware of the Press Gazette building doesn't mean I agree with it. Okay. I just don't.
I'm
aware of it. There's two things when it comes to any business, and it's the equipment, bricks and mortar, and then it's the people.
Right.
I didn't know you were 30 positions short. Are they funded and they're not? I want to talk about recruiting a little bit. We had a kid on here, he's 21 years old, graduate, and he's applying for jobs now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd hire the guy. You know, he was a good one, but you kind of lost a little bit. And are the applicants back to where you want them to be?
Yeah. So to your first question, these are positions that we really should have to meet demand for service above what we're funded for.
Okay, I got it.
We have two different staffing problems in our community, and we are not unique in this. This is very common in American municipal police departments right now. The first problem is how many of your positions you that you're authorized to have actually have people in them. And that's where the recruiting issue comes in. And we've done better. We have fewer vacancies than we had, and we do have a fairly steady pipeline of good applicants, and we are hiring people at a fairly steady pace. It's never going to be like it was in the early 90s when I started in this business, when 1,000 people would show up to take the test.
A couple hundred people for one job?
Right. Those days are over.
Before I let you off that, I just want to know why. Is it because of this culture, or is it because there's better jobs? Is it because of pay? Because I think it's a very, very admirable job. I mean, didn't every kid grow up wanting to be a cop? I mean, you saw that even on the President's State of the Union address.
Sure. Well, I sure did.
Did you?
I grew up wanting to be a police officer.
I think that's cool. I want you to touch on that, because I don't know. You're saying it's not Green Bay, because it's everywhere. That instead of 200 applicants, it may be closer to 20 or 30. I don't know what it is, but the fact that we have less of that, less people applying. Do you have a theory on that, or do you have an answer to that?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a few things. I think, historically, when you see we're in a period of historically low unemployment, and often in the past, what I've seen is when unemployment across the board is low, we see fewer applicants in policing. I think there is also a generational component to it. I saw a statistic now several years ago that the average 18-year-old entering the workforce, and this was probably around 2010, would have like 5 different jobs by the time they turn 35. So there's an expectation that is different with our current generation of young people. I would be remiss if I did not point out that there's been, and I think we're coming out of this, but there's been a bit of a crisis in confidence in American policing, and there's been a lot of negative energy focused on policing in the last several years, and I think that contributes to it.
Okay, we're going to a break just a bit, but weren't we a little bit, did we experience that? I didn't feel it. Did we experience that? Here, that negative towards policing, I just think we kind of kept our admiration for you guys, right?
I think you're right.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. Hey, we're here with Chief Davis, our leader of the Green Bay Police Department, who's been here in Green Bay for the last 3.5 years. It's a big job, and he's doing a lot of things. When we come back, we'll talk a little about what he's doing in terms of technology, some of the different ways we're policing now than we used to do, we'll ask him a few more questions on really immigration, fentanyl, you see it all. So we'll be right back. This is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt. If I stopped, it would make the show. Can't keep up with my rhythm, though. They keep trying too quick for the lines they throw.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Jim Schmidt, we have an in-studio guest who I'm so excited he's here, and that is Chris Davis, who is the police chief here in the city of Green Bay. And just talking about what he thought of Green Bay before he took the job, and now that he's been here 3.5 years, did that meet his expectations? And as you heard in the first episode, it exceeded his expectations, and I'm glad to hear that. The support from the community is very strong. Budgeting is always a struggle. Are we keeping up from a technology standpoint? And there's always the latest and greatest coming out in public safety.
Yeah, I think we really are. And I think that's one of our great strengths here. Our philosophy is, there's always tons of new technology for policing. Right. There's a huge industry that exists to sell us expensive new tech stuff. What we're looking for, though, is not solutions in search of problems. So our tech acquisitions are based on what we need. And, you know, we've been able to do pretty well. We've been able to get some firearms trace technology a few years ago that has made a big difference when it comes to reducing gun violence. Our body camera program is now several years old, and that has been just a game changer for a lot of reasons for us. And then, you know, we are able to get the technology that we need to get the job done. And that, I think that is a force multiplier for us as it gets harder and harder to recruit cops. Being as efficient as we can with the limited time of theirs that we have is going to be more and more important, and technology can help you do that.
I would agree that you're going to attract, I'm not saying better, but you're going to, talent is going to look at you and they're going to look, do you have the latest and greatest? Or do you have technology that's, I mean, you don't want to go into a place that's archaic and they're still using some old file system. The Packers, and I've used this analogy when I tried to get a new building when I was mayor. One of the things that attracted to the Packers, and we got the history, but so do we as a city. You know, if you think the common between the two of us, and but when they put in that facility, I mean, that weight room, that kitchen, they really treat their players like, I don't want to say royalty, but boy, is that a nice place to hang out? You know, movie theater. Sure. Not that you needed all that, but your facilities. I want to talk about that because we can't, you mentioned the Prescott's Ed building, and like sure. I said, I'm not the biggest fan of that. Is that going to get us talent? Because it's not so much, you need more space. Everybody knows you're out of space, but every department's out of space. You know, you just go in there and ask them, what do you need? Oh, we need more space. That will give you the space. But I'm talking about, you're studying technology, but the environment. Are there places where mm-hmm. police departments that have more than offices and a shooting range?
There are. And I think that your facility is important for two reasons. There's the external audience, there's the community and the use that it gets out of the facility. You know, does it have a community room for people from the community to come in and use? And is it an inviting place to go, especially, you know, for some people on the worst day of their lives? But also for the folks who have to work there, it is critically important to have functional and good facilities that people enjoy coming to work in. And, you know, to your point about recruiting, that is something that potential applicants look at. They're choosing us now. It used to be when we had 100 applicants for every position, the job for us was to weed people out. Here, it's to try to select people in and to attract them. And we've been able, because we do have a lot of the things that potential police officer hires want right now. So we have, that's worked to our advantage. But I do think that our facility is one place where, you know, we really need to improve, and we're doing what we can. We also have to live within the means of the city.
And I do think that, again, I think the talent that we recruit, you know, any business, even where I work, the schools, the teachers, salary is really not, it's important. And you got to be competitive, but all things being equal, there's a lot of other things. And I would imagine mm-hmm. that your recruits are young, you know, 25, what, 28? They're going to have kids. They want to know about the schools, the parks.
Yeah. And, you know, 25 actually even is older than average for really? A lot of our applicants now. We're getting a lot of really young applicants. And what is more important, I think, at least in my experience with that generation, is the experience that they have when they come to work. And if they're able to work with people that they enjoy working with on meaningful work that keeps right. their minds engaged, then you'll keep them happy and you'll keep them there. And we're able, you know, we're fortunate here to be a big enough city that there are a lot of things to do in the police department. So there is that meaningful work, and you're not just buried in it like you are in some major cities right now. So we have a nice balance of activity. But they're also, especially if they're coming from outside, and for a lot of people from the community who live here because they want to live here, because it's a place where they can do things outside of work that they like to do. And here in Northeast Wisconsin, we're fortunate to have a lot of that.
I would agree. Just I want to just make a comment on the age thing. I think I'm getting older because I was okay with the athletes.
Not me.
The athletes being young. Now the police, you're saying, are 21, 22. Mm-hmm. And in healthcare, it's amazing. You know, you go in there and it's like Dookie Hauser. These doctors, but they are so smart. Oh, my God. So yeah. There's a lot of talent. Age doesn't isn't always the most important thing. I mean, experience is important. It's good. But, mm-hmm. boy, you get somebody who's got the right vision and the right attitude, even though they're 21, 22, 23, they can deliver.
Yeah, and you know, people my age complain a lot about the folks in their 20s entering the job market now. I really don't. I think if that's the generation that we're going to hand off the police profession to, then we're going to be in good shape. Because, yeah, their priorities are a little different than ours, but they're smart, they're super highly motivated, right. And if they're well-led and there's a thoughtful vision to the work, they're going to take this profession to the next level,
which is awesome. We talked about equipment, facilities. I want to talk a little bit about the mental health of mm-hmm. the officers. I don't know if we have time here. Why don't you start on that? Because I think that's really important, sure. that we take care of people, you know, physically, but everything's from the neck down, and we got to start talking about the neck up.
You're absolutely right. And I think as a profession, we've gotten better at that in the last few years. In our organization, we've made a really significant an intentional investment in the wellness of all of our employees. And it's not just for our sworn police officers, it's our professional staff too, because right. they have to deal with some really difficult subject matter sometimes. And historically, police officers have not done that in a very healthy way. And we have to encourage them to cope with the stresses of the work in healthy ways.
And you've got someone who you brought staff in for
we
that?
Did.
Oh, you did.
We did.
That's awesome. I mean, that shows it's a priority when you to talk about it. But like I said, to put money behind it is something else. I'm glad you're doing that because we need to take care of from head to toe. So,
yep,
all right. All right, Chief, we're going to be right back. We got a whole bunch of questions here for you. I'll get to that. I keep saying that. And we'll get to the draft eventually. But right now, we're going to go to a quick break here. You're listening to Lean Local with Jim Schmidt.
From the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, a weekly program focusing on local issues, prominent local candidates, political experts, and community leaders, helping to build better communities. This is Lean Local. And now, here's your host, former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Lean Local. We are in our second half of the show, and we've been spending the time with Chief Davis, who is the Green Bay police chief. And it's been interesting to look at his perspective of Green Bay, kind of an outsider, but now, of course, he's one of us. And the things that he sees that are, everything's positive, but what could even be more positive? And we ended talking about the focus on some of the assets that you need or that you have. But more so, we were talking about, you know, the mental health and how we're caring for the people who work for you. And I think you're doing a great job on all those things. Before we get into that, there's a whole lot of other things I want to talk about. But before, I just want to thank our sponsor for this show, Chief. It's Nicolet Bank. I'm sure you know them.
I've heard of them, yes.
They're just great. That is a community-minded bank and, started back in 2002. And I'm telling you, their mission statement back then is the same as it is now. The vision statement is that we're going to be a true community bank. And they do so much supporting the community, City Deck, some homeless shelter, great events. They have grown to, 57 locations right now in Wisconsin, Michigan. And they do it all. You go in there and talk to them, and it's whether you want to buy a house or buy a business. They're there. So it's just a great, and I want to just thank them for sponsoring Lean Local. And that just speaks to the community bank. It's like they could advertise other places, but they're like, look, you're going to talk about the local community here. You're going to get the chief on. I'm like, eventually. And here you are. So
here I am.
You're right. And I'm glad you're here. Let's talk a little bit. We left talking about some of the mental health and support that you give your employees. I'm going to segue into the community at large. Mm-hmm. And with that, I want to talk about homelessness. I think every community experiences homelessness. Mm-hmm. And as much as everyone hopes, I think it's always going to be there. And I don't know why, but I just feel like, I don't know. How are we doing? How are you doing? People complain a lot about homelessness. We're down here in Green Bay, right on Washington Street. People walk by. I'm down here every morning with my other show. And it's visible.
Right.
Are they dangerous? I don't think so, but it's visible. And I don't think people... What's your perspective on homelessness?
Well, homelessness is a really big, complex issue. And it has always been with us, as you say, and it probably always will. A lot of times there's a tendency to want to make that a police issue. Homelessness is not a simple enough problem to be solved only by policing. It's way too complex for that. The police do have a role, though, and what we've learned certainly over the last several years, and, you know, in particular in the city that I came from, is if we, there is always a segment of your homeless community that for whatever reason, often through a combination of untreated mental health and addiction issues, that is engaged in an outsized amount of antisocial behavior. That's a very small percentage of your total homeless community. You know, you mentioned the folks that you see downtown. There is a huge part of the homeless community that you probably never see because it's a way more diverse than that. But what we certainly learned on the West Coast over the last 10 or 15 years is that for that more service-resistant segment of your homeless population, if you just remove all accountability and if you stop appropriately, keyword appropriately, but if you stop enforcing your community standards for behavior in that population, you can get some really bad results. And we lived through that in the city that I came from in the form of homeless encampments of sometimes hundreds of people and some really problematic public safety issues.
Okay, I want to talk about that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that the potential for that happening is here if you don't police it, if you don't enforce it. Here's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'll go to a city and then I'll go back in 2 years and it's unbelievable how many tents and encampments are there. Right. And it's maybe a year and a half even. And you go back, it's like, this is unbelievable. Like, where did all these people come from? I don't know if they moved there or they were there or they feel more comfortable that they're not going to. I don't want that to happen here.
Right. And I don't think anyone does. And we know here locally, the vast majority of our homeless population has some local ties to the community. Maybe about 10% of it at any given time is from somewhere else with no ties to the Green Bay community. But where it gets out of control is when communities stop enforcing the same community standards that they would for anyone. You know, I can't go to a city park and drink in public. There's a rule against that, and I'll have consequences if I do that. So, you know, while we, and you hear commentary about criminalizing homelessness, that's not what I'm talking about at all. But if you're, for every member of our community, there is a baseline set of expectations about how we're all going to live together in the city of Green Bay, how we're going to treat each other, how we're going to use our public spaces. And, you know, setting up a large encampment in a public park is a misuse of public spaces. And so what we've done here in this community, we've actually been able to make a lot of progress on this issue. It started with just bringing all the different stakeholders together and getting on the same page as far as the definition of the problem that we were even there to solve. And then being able to share an understanding among all the different stakeholders. So that's folks in the advocacy community, the police, the downtown business community, residents, everyone, that we're going to do it the right way, and we're going to do it in a way that's compassionate and that doesn't make the problem worse, but we all have to abide by the same set of community standards, especially in our public spaces. And even just setting that baseline expectation makes a lot of the more problematic aspects of this huge, complicated problem a little better.
I think that's a great place to start, because I think some people may think you're giving them a break and almost enabling. But if they're treated just like you and me, you know, I mean, there's help out there. We have to connect them to that help. I mean, you and I both are pretty familiar with the new community shelter. You serve on the board there. But okay. And keeping it at all the same level, same rules, you know, can't be in a park all night, can't drink on the street. If the same rules are applied to them as they are to us, you don't fear these encampments popping up.
I really don't, because the places where you see that happen are places where a lot of the time cities have tried to concentrate folks in the homeless community in a specific place. And the logic goes that then we know where to find them to reach them with services. My experience with that approach is that it doesn't turn out to work as well as we hoped it would.
Okay, that makes sense. Hey, something else that people have concerns about, and the media drives a lot of concerns. I just remember when I'd be out somewhere and, oh, the mayor, the city's going to hell. I'm like, where do you get your news? Because, you know, it's one of those TV things where, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And I think we've lost a little bit of local content. And I think I'll give Sage credit for buying this station and converting it into a station that's going to focus more on local issues. Because there are a lot of good things going on in Green Bay. And I want to hear from that in our next segment. But right now, I want to stay with the homeless. And I want to talk a little bit about fentanyl and about the drugs and how you're trying to, that would be a little bit more of a police thing, I would think.
Yes, I would agree.
Okay, so where are we at?
Well, the good news is it's gotten better. We were at a really high level of fentanyl use, and the way we measure that is with overdoses that we respond to, and then we looked at Narcan saves. All our police officers carry Narcan, and how often they were saving people having opioid overdoses, and the numbers got pretty bad for a couple of years there. I think, you know, we've seen a dramatic decrease in the amount of fentanyl that is available in the community. I think a lot of that has to do with some things going on at the border right now, where it's a lot harder to get it into the country. And we're actually seeing some older drugs that we didn't see much of, like crack cocaine, starting to kind of come back a little bit. Fentanyl is even worse, though, because by the time you get, if you're addicted to fentanyl, by the time you hit that rock bottom and you're ready to try to get out of that, usually by then it's too late, because it is so easy to get a lethal overdose of fentanyl. Usually that happens before somebody gets the wherewithal to start that, make that turn and get into recovery.
And it's not the guy living in there's. In the drug dog guy in the alley. I've been to some of those funerals. Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable. It's these young kids that had a future. And I don't know what happened. If it was, I'm so glad to hear that you think it's decreasing.
It is. And you're right. It cuts across absolutely every socioeconomic and all the other boundaries that we draw for ourselves and communities. It impacts everyone across the board.
All right. Well, you're doing a good job on that. I got these 21-year-olds working in here. I'll get to it, Kyle. Speaking of drugs, now we're going to shift to something that's not nearly as lethal, but still a drug. Tell me your marijuana, weed, whatever you guys call it now, that's been kicked around in our state, as you know, in Madison. We are surrounded by states that legalize it.
Right.
And here we are, kind of the hole in the donut that people like, get with the times. If I had a vote on that, I would go to you. And I've done that before. The chiefs that worked for me, I'm like, where are you at with this? And I've been pretty consistent. And I'm just curious as to you as our chief in 2025.
Well, I think historically we've looked at marijuana use through a moral lens, right? That, at least when I was growing up, the way marijuana use was portrayed to us by the mainstream culture was that it's immoral and that's why you shouldn't do it. I think the larger society has moved on from that, frankly. And I think younger people these days just don't see it that way. And I think we need to be realistic about that. And I think we need to just be okay with that, that society's attitudes towards marijuana have changed. Yours and mine maybe not, maybe they have. But where I look at it as a practical problem with marijuana legalization, now that we've experienced it in a number of places, including the state that I came here from, one of the things I think people don't realize, one of the pitfalls in legalizing marijuana, is what is going to be sold in legal marijuana businesses isn't likely to be the weed they smoked at Woodstock, where the THC content was much lower than it is now. Not to mention all of the marijuana derivatives that are available, sometimes with very high THC concentrations. And we're starting to learn some really scary things about long-term use of THC at these much higher levels. And so the people making the decisions right now think what they're legalizing is, you know, the weed that people smoked at Woodstock or in the 80s when I grew up. And it really is a completely different thing. And so if you legalize marijuana, how do you regulate THC content? Because it's a product for which there already exists a thriving underground economy. And so if we say you can't sell anything legally with a THC concentration above X, then that underground economy will kick in and supply that thing that you've outlawed. And so that's the thing I don't think anybody anticipated when we started this conversation about legalizing, especially recreational marijuana, now in the last 10 years or so. And so as a public safety matter, I would feel more comfortable with it if we knew a lot more about how those high levels of THC affect people.
That's interesting. I have to learn more about that. My thing is that they put this carrot out there with taxes, revenue, and every city needs more money. You know, like you said, there's a lot of things you want. You get some of it. You don't get everything you want. I mean, I've seen some of your wish lists you guys send in. It's like, you know, we just don't have that kind of money.
Sure.
That's an interesting argument you just put forward. I have to do a little bit more research on that. All right, we got to come back. We got to talk about the draft. We got to talk about the good things going on. And we got to talk about speeding. That's one of the problems. Right. All right, we're going to be right back. It's Lean Local with Jim Schmidt.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Your host, Jim Schmidt, here with Chief Chris Davis, who is the leader of the Green Bay Police Department. He's been chief here for just going on 4 years, and we've covered a lot of ground, and I only have an hour show, so I can't. I have some more questions for you on the things we talked about, but you know, I want you to come back here if that's okay. Let's talk about some of the things that are going on right now. The draft. That's big news, and it should be, right?
Sure.
We'll be on the world stage. We deserve that. I think it's a great community. You want to show it off. Again, I think there's some people that have some concerns. I mean, probably no one more visible when it comes to making this thing work is, you know, there's a handful of you, but public safety has got to be a big part of this.
It is. And, you know, especially in today's climate where we have to worry about things that happen at big public events that we just didn't used to have to worry about. The good news is that we have a lot of experience in the local public safety community, both on the law enforcement and the fire side, at dealing with big events because we have the Packers here. And we have some great partners to work with in local public safety and also with the Packers and the NFL to make this event work really well, I think. You know, our goal is that you're able to come enjoy the event and not have to worry about safety because we've got that covered. You never want to be overconfident, but we're, And we have a very thoughtful plan. And I think it's going to be a great event.
When you bring in, and I don't know the number, but even on Packer days, there's people walking around. That's 80,000 people. And if you take that times two, three, four, whatever it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of people walking around.
Sure.
Just, again, it's a personal thing. What scares me are these crazy drivers. And that's happened. It happened in New Orleans, happened at the parade. That's awful. Like, what? Is every street, when you close a street, is it going to be barricaded? Can people congregate? I think that's a fear. I think I have that fear. You worry about these crazy drivers.
Sure. And that's why I say, you know, we're having to worry about things that we didn't used to have to. That's just a reality of our business. And so all of our plans include how to prevent vehicle intrusions from large groups of people, whether it's an accident or it's something that's intentional. And that just has to be part of the planning of large public events and public spaces now.
So that's a lot of people coming to visit. And what are you doing for staffing? You don't have the department to do that.
Well, but we don't. No one agency does. Right. But we do have a really good, a very well-coordinated and collaborative public safety community here in the Green Bay area, because we work like that on a day-to-day basis. We have great relationships with Brown County Sheriff's Office, with Ashwaubenon Public Safety, who are the main partners. You know, the draft takes place in all three of those law enforcement jurisdictions.
Right.
And so we've been working together really well from the beginning to plan the public safety part of this event. And we're drawing on those great relationships that we have. And you know, we will have to bring in some other resources from outside the local area, but we're pretty confident we'll be able to staff most of this with police resources from within Brown County.
Well, you bringing retired guys back, or what will you do for the outside resources? Or is that could be just other communities that'll come in?
We have a large contingent of Wisconsin State Patrol, and I have to give them credit where it's due that they've stepped up for us in a big way, mostly to help with the traffic plan around the event. Then Brown County Sheriff's Office, of course, is going to contribute a lot of resources in the village of Ashwaubenon. Yeah. And then our other Brown County police agencies, most of them have been able to at least send, you know, even two or three people to make it work. And then we also, for some of the specialized needs that we have, we'll lean on our federal law enforcement partner.
No. And, you know, it's different, but it's not new. I mean, Kansas City, you know, I don't know about Vegas, but, you know, Kansas City, that's not totally dissimilar to us, a larger city. Detroit's laid out a little bit different, but I'm sure you've been in contact with them and getting some advice.
Sure. We had access to all of their plans from Detroit, Kansas City, and Nashville. Had some great conversations, actually, with the chief of police in Kansas City and the chief in Detroit, myself. We sent a delegation over to Detroit to watch their event. All those cities have been great. And provided us with all their plans, and that's given us a lot to work with to develop ours.
I think it's going to be great. I mean, I'm excited about it. There's a couple things that we're working on where I work, and there's something we're doing with the radio show too that we think is going to be kind of different. And I think we should have a lot of fun with this because it's going to be a while before it comes back.
Yeah, and it's going to be a really cool event, and it's a once in a lifetime thing. And so, you know, not to, you know, kind of like Dr. Strangelove, I've just learned to stop worrying and love the draft, and it's going to be okay.
That's a good attitude. A couple other things. You have a good attitude, and I think that is really, really important. And you know that, but I mean, things come from the top down. I just really believe that high energy, good attitude, compassion, all that stuff should start at the top. Tell me what you like, what you feel good about. I think people need to hear that because there's a lot of good things going on in this community. The youth that's coming up. I mean, I know you're in schools quite a bit. You work at the homeless shelter, or I serve on the board, I should say, and you're on probably some other boards as well.
Yeah, just the way this community comes together around its issues. And, you know, I don't see a lot of denial. What I see is just, you know, if we have a problem, we get together from all our different perspectives and we try to solve it because we all live here, and that level of investment in the community it is fantastic here.
Okay, I got to ask because of my previous job, how's the council treating you?
You know, actually, you're going to expect me to say this, but I have to tell the truth.
I have to hope so.
They've been really supportive.
Good.
And, you know, it's a diverse group, and so they, and I think that's a good thing. They come at the issues from different perspectives. They work pretty well together. And, you know, for us in public safety, they've been across the board very supportive, which I think is part of the reason why this is such a safe city.
And if they're supportive, they're representing their districts, because the districts, like we started when we talked, they're supportive. And it's because of people right. like you, and you've got a great police department, the men and women, the sworn, non-sworn. It's all good stuff. So, hey, thanks for being on the show, and thanks for what you're doing here in Green Bay. It's going to be fun to see you just manage the public safety of our community. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad I'm here.
You bet. Okay. Thanks for listening. This has been Lean Local with Jim Schmidt.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.